Welcome to Tee Talk, where athletes share their stories. Join us as we explore the profound connections between sports, community, and the human experience.
I'm Carmen Jones. I'm here with Melvin Ferdinand, Tulane football player, track star. From what years did you go to Tulane?
86 to 91. Graduated May of 1991.
I remember those days because I was there at the same time.
Of course you were.
Wonderful.
Yes.
So, Melvin, just a little background. I know you went to St. Aug. Mm-hmm. What type of awards did you get while you were at St. Aug?
While at St. Aug, class of 1986, I received the Scholar Athlete Award, the award which is given to a student who participated in sports while simultaneously maintaining the highest grade point average.
Awesome.
My hope was to get the Purple Knight Award, which is the highest. I didn't get it. That honor went to Stephen Stays, who was certainly rightfully deserving of that award.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So after you achieved all of those things, what was the recruiting process like for you, and how did you come around to choosing Tulane?
Well, coming out of St. Aug, I was not highly sought after in football. We had just come off of a state mile relay track championship.
Weren't y'all that track, that mile relay, wasn't that an All-American mile relay?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
It was an All-American mile relay team with a time of, I think, 3:14, 3:13.
Sounds about right.
And we had some incredible athletes on that team. We had Terrell Haynes, Gerald Brooks, and Kenneth Burton, and made up the mile relay team. And it was an exciting time because my heart bleeds purple and gold, St. Aug, and love the mile relay. But Mac Brown, who was the head football coach here at Tulane at that time, recruited me, and as he indicated to my parents, he saw potential. Coming out of St. Aug, we had Kenneth Burton leading receiver, Leroy Hoard at running back. I played tight end in high school and was certainly too small to play tight end here at Tulane back then, 40 pounds ago. So it was an exciting time, that whole recruiting process. I was looked at it by TCU, Nichols State, and a few other smaller schools. Received some invitations from LSU, but I don't know how serious they were. Nevertheless, Mac Brown, who I think had a strategic plan in that he would get into the heads of the parents and or the grandparents, and not just the athlete, because he understood once that meeting was over, those parents or grandparents would be able to reinforce the message he was sending to the athlete. So my parents and my grandmother, they were very instrumental in me choosing Tulane. They pretty much demanded, hey, you're going to go to Tulane. So here's where I ended up.
Well, it seems like Mac Brown was always recognized as an excellent recruiter. And
indeed,
even here at Tulane, there were a number of high-profile athletes that actually came to Tulane. Do you think Mac Brown had a lot to do with that?
Without a doubt. Coach Mac Brown was at that time one of the youngest coaches in college football and managed to successfully recruit Terrence Jones, Heisman Trophy candidate, Mark Zeno, the NC2A all-time leading receiver at that time, and a host, a host of other student athletes from around the country. So his influence, as was clearly demonstrated back then, we're talking the mid-80s, and he is still successful at it today. While taking his approach to recruiting from Tulane to North Carolina to Texas, and got out of the business of coaching for a period of time, and now he's back at it, winning again at North Carolina. So, yes.
So he's back at North Carolina now?
He is. He's the head football coach at North Carolina.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Okay. So you come to Tulane. What was campus like at that time? What was campus life like being a football player, you ran track as well?
I did.
So running track, playing football, what was day-to-day like for you on campus?
Day-to-day was at times fun, at times a bit frightening. coming from St. Aug High School in all boys, at that time all black high school here in the city, and attending Tulane at that time, if my memory serves me correctly, we had, I think, a 10% minority population. That was with the undergrad student body. So going from a high school campus where I saw a bunch of black males, young black males like myself, walking the halls of St. Aug High School, coming to Tulane, where it was predominantly white. You had males and females sitting in classes at on occasions where I was the only African-American.
Speaking of that, what was the classroom environment like for you? Because clearly, if someone looks at you, they would know that he's an athlete. So what was your experience in the classroom being an athlete at that time at Tulane?
Well, we had to deal with that stigma. There were some professors who, in my opinion, they treated every student fairly. And sadly to say, there were others, in my opinion, where I felt like I was looked at differently because not only was I black, but a black athlete at this academic institution, Tulane University. So there were some challenges there. And I had some of my peers who would state openly, not directly to me, but in conversation with other peers, where they knew I was in earshot, would say, well, the football players are here because they play football. Otherwise, they wouldn't be here because they didn't have the grades or the financial resources, which in many cases was perhaps the truth. It most definitely was not the truth in my case.
So what type of things did you do when you would hear those statements? Did you address it with the student in the class or the professor, or did you just kind of take that within yourself to try to show them who you were?
I think showing it was my best approach. I never discussed it with a professor. We discussed it on occasions with the academic advisor, Dr. Hill, and others, Mr. Hughes. We discussed it with a few coaches. I discussed it on one occasion with one of my peers, a guy who I thought, a white gentleman, white student, who I thought looked at us, the athletes, as just good athletes, good people. I thought he had the ability to look beyond race. And he and I forged a friendship and while we were here at Tulane. And he and I had the discussion on at least one occasion.
Okay. And so how did you move from feeling that way in those situations to just doing your best in class and you know, not letting that affect how you were going to perform either on the field or in a classroom?
Well, Carmen, for me, having structure has always been important. I love waking up early, 5:30. In the morning.
Even when we were in school. Oh, my goodness.
And even to this day, I love falling asleep early by 8:30, 9 o'clock. I think it's time to shut it down, just for me personally. So with that structure and with the understanding that there's a time and place for everything, I refuse at that time to let any of the comments that I heard some students make negatively impact me as a student here at Tulane. I consider myself blessed to be here on a football scholarship. My parents could not afford to send me here. So because of those students who chose to come here for whatever reason, whose parents had the financial resources, good for them. But I knew what I represented. I know what I stand for, even back then to this present day. So I didn't let what they say distract me into influenced me negatively as a student here at Tulane.
Excellent. So did you hear of any other students that may have taken different approaches, any other situations that may have turned into, you know, different type of situations as opposed to just being quiet about it?
Yes, I did, but we will leave out the names to protect innocent.
We will do that.
The majority of the team were black student athletes, and some of them were a bit rowdy and would not hesitate to express their opinion on something. And if they felt challenged by anybody, whether it be a regular student or a teammate, they would step up and voice their opinion. And interestingly enough, I bumped into a few of those guys this past weekend, just before the game. And the mentality and the attitude is still the same. So, yes, I did encounter some of that.
Well, just think and stand along those lines. Mm-hmm. The environment that we're in now is, you know, people have to say the right thing, do the right thing, be extra careful about how they come across because of social media, things that we didn't really have to deal with at that time. How do you think social media has changed the way that student athletes respond to different situations today?
Well, there's no doubt that social media has had its impact on society. But I saw the shift well before social media. And not to get too political, but I think, no pun intended, we have become such a politically correct society. And with that, I would add, there are so many people who refuse to embrace responsibility, and no one wants to be held accountable. I think social media has just exposed a lot of that, where everyone has a camera now, everyone is posting,
right.
And everyone seemingly wants to be the first to get the message out. So I think social media has its place in time in society, but I think more importantly, there's a lack of humanity, decency towards just your fellow human being. And we have gotten caught up, and this is exposed via the social media, of people refusing to be held accountable.
Yeah, and I think something else that's also involved in that is you can hide behind human contact and conversation, and I feel like it was great getting to know you guys, being a student athlete at the same time, being able to interact with you guys and do on a personal level and actually do things with you guys and talk to you guys and learn how to communicate with people and be sensitive towards what they are feeling. And I feel like with social media, sometimes that communication or that connectiveness gets lost in text messages and posting and that type of thing. So I think there are certainly advantages to social media, but sometimes they can kind of cause some, I want to say, social backwardness.
Yes. Yes, without a doubt. Well, Carmen, you know, you and I go way back to high school when you were a student at McMain.
Right,
I was a student
right.
at St. Aug, and we've seen the transition. And to your point, it's very easy to hide behind the keyboard,
yes.
get your message out while you are directly attacking someone for whatever reason. And that's a part of the negative side of social media.
Yeah, and I think one thing about us in that time, we didn't all have to agree, but we did try to respect each other.
Without a doubt.
And I think sometimes social media, you can hide behind having to respect people and just throw things out. So
we see it daily.
Daily. Well, good. So some of the people that you had some really cool experiences with here at Tulane, what are some situations that kind of stand out to you as, wow, this was crazy, or, you know, this was exceptional during that time?
Okay, well, I have to start from the beginning, and that is during the summer between my senior year at St. Aug and freshman year here at Tulane, I heard so much about Mark Zeno. I had never met, as we call him, 1Z, never met him, but was interested and curious, like, who is this guy? You know, I want to see him. And I will always remember walking out of the dorm, this freshman dorm at the time. I'm walking out, and who do I see walking by with some of the other guys on the team? It was Mark Zeno.
Oh, wow.
And it was like, wow, I'm starstruck. There he is. And as a rookie, and he reminds me that today, he and I are really good friends, and he still occasionally says, hey, what's up, Rook? How's it going? but a super guy, really nice guy. And sitting in the meeting rooms with him and watching his performance at practice and seeing every day these spectacular catches where people would see in a Superdome and be like, wow.
Right.
Seeing that routinely by such a gifted athlete was, that was amazing. You fast forward to my sophomore year, my redshirt sophomore year, you have Terrence Jones, Heisman Trophy candidate, quarterback, competing at the time against Rodney Peete, who played quarterback at USC. And the calmness, the professionalism of Terrence Jones. And to me, he had that quiet confidence that I always desired. Like, that's the guy right there. So when you take that combination, you have a Terrence Jones and a Mark Zeno, I can honestly say, and I know I speak for many, I was watching some of the best in the country during that time at the collegiate level.
Definitely. And what was the Superdome atmosphere like at that time? Because I know you guys played in the Superdome.
I loved playing in the Superdome. Every year we played LSU, we played Florida State, and to two teams that traveled well, and to see that dome packed with 60, 70,000 fans, it was exciting. You never had to worry about the weather.
Right.
And truth be told, watching them build the Superdome growing up here in New Orleans, they would literally fly parts of the rooftop over the city, put that rooftop part in place.
Right,
the welders would do their thing. That was exciting. And going to the games, the Bayou Classics, and saying, you know what, one day I'm going to play in this dome.
Right.
And to actually get to that level playing football here at Tulane. I loved it. Loved playing in the dome.
Awesome. Now, do you remember the field house or the stadium being there before they built Stadium Place? Or was Stadium Place already there when you got there?
Stadium Place was already built
okay.
when I came here in 86. But I remember back in the day, the old Tulane Stadium, but I never attended a game there.
Okay.
I just remember seeing it on the news and hearing different reports about it. But Stadium Place was already here.
Gotcha. And what type of accolades did you get running track for Tulane?
Running track for Tulane was awesome. There was a guy, Mervin Jackson. Mervin is now the principal at Warren Easton High School.
Okay.
Mervin and I attended St. Aug together. He was class of 85. I'm class of 86. We were on the 4x1 relay.
Wow.
As was Eric Thomas.
Right.
Arguably one of the fastest men in America at that time.
Yeah.
With a 4.240 yard.
Okay.
And to see the range, we call him E.T., Eric Thomas, could easily get a 10, low 10 something in 100, 20 something, almost 19 in a 200, and give you a solid 45, 46 in the 400. Rarely do you see a runner with that. I'm reluctant to say sprinter because he could probably run an 800.
Right.
So, excuse me, to be on the same team with those guys, Marvin Cephas, Marvin Allen, and Mervin Jackson and others, it was exciting for me. I was a freshman right out of high school. So to be a part of all the action, I loved it.
That's awesome. So let's kind of move forward a little bit. So you didn't do the traditional route after finishing school. You actually went into the military. How did that come about?
As a senior in high school, before I was really looked at in terms of receiving a scholarship, a couple guys and I, Bennett Williams, Richard Carr, I think Kenneth was a part of it, a few of us discussed joining the military. And Bennett and I, without a doubt, we were serious about it. So we concluded, if we don't get a scholarship, we're going to join the military. Luckily, I got a scholarship here. Graduated from Tulane in 91 and taught algebra and geometry at John McDonnell High School.
Okay.
And then worked as a psych tech at DePaul Hospital. for 2 years. During that time, I took an assessment of my life, and I realized there's an entire world out there that I would like to see. And I decided, you know what? I'm going to join the military. I'm going to join the Marine Corps. And there was a buddy of mine. His name is Kevin Buckles. Kevin and I went to Samuel J. Peters together.
I know Kevin.
Back in 1979, 1980 time frame.
He played in a band, right?
Mm-hmm. Indeed he did. One of the best snare drummers out there.
Yes.
Well, while watching television at home, contemplating, do I join the military? What am I going to do with my life? I had a job, decent income, salary, but I felt like I was missing something. And this Marine Corps commercial came on, and it says, do you have what it takes to be one of us, the few, the proud, like Corporal Kevin Buckles, and his picture pops up. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm sold. I was supposed to see this commercial.
Right, right.
And sure enough, I joined the Marine Corps, and upon leaving Baghdad, I got orders to go to, after leaving Okinawa, Japan, I got orders to go to Marine Barracks, Washington, D.C.
Okay.
That's the showcase of the Marine Corps. And guess who was stationed there?
Wow.
Kevin Buckles.
Yeah.
So we were there together for 2.5 years. We're good friends. And I shared the story with him. I said, man, you're part of the reason I joined. Kevin did 30 years.
Wow.
30 years of service to the Corps, to his country, and retired a few years ago.
Okay.
I did my 22 years and retired in 2016. And I will tell you, of those 22 years, 11 of them were enjoyable years. But you take several weeks here, a few months
right.
there, for roughly a total of 3 years that were not so good.
Yeah.
I'm happy with the service.
Good. So how did the skills you learned playing football and being in sports translate over as you went into the service and other industries that you've been in?
Well, having played basketball for a significant portion of your life, you know what teamwork is like. You ran track for McMaine. You were part of state championship teams. We both can speak to what it's like to be a part of a team, that teamwork, not the individual, but that teamwork and what it does, the way it helps you in life.
Correct.
And no matter who you are, we all got to where we are because someone else helped us get there.
Right.
And there are many people who are in certain positions that we were able to help get there. That's part of not just the teamwork aspect of it, but to me it goes hand in hand with humanity. The human factor is what I like to call it. So playing football, whether it was peewee ball at Comiskey Playground, football at Gregory Junior High, football at St. Aug, football here at Tulane, football, it's a team sport, and it has helped me in many ways throughout my life from age 7 to the current day.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about just transitioning. So mm-hmm. were there people, I know you talked about Kevin and Mervin, but were there people at Tulane that kind of helped you transition, or were you kind of on your own as you went through the transitioning process from mm-hmm. college to your jobs mm-hmm. and then the Marine Corps?
Quite honestly, Carmen, there wasn't. Dr. Phil Hughes, the academic advisor, Dr. Hill, and others were there, particularly as during my freshman, sophomore year. But when it was time to graduate and move on and have those connections, I can't say that there was anyone that helped me from the school. My first job at John McDonough High School, teaching algebra and geometry, I was blessed to get that job. I was searching for jobs, filling out job applications, but Mr. Raynard Sanders, who was the principal at John Mack at that time, he was the brother-in-law of Kenneth Burton.
Okay.
Kenneth and I were kids together. We exchanged batons on the Ma relay.
Right.
So Mr. Sanders has known me since I was a kid. And he says, hey, I have two positions open at John Mack. I have a science position and I have a math position, and I want you to take one of those. I said, yes, sir, I'll take the math position. And off I went.
Nice.
So I wish there had been more involvement.
Yeah, so that's one of the main reasons that we are doing this podcast, mm-hmm. is to just really galvanize a network, mm-hmm. to help support student athletes as they transition. You know, some student athletes come from families and they have what they need. But there's other student athletes, yes. that totally focus on their sport. They don't really get involved as much with the Tulane community. Now, the Tulane Alumni Services, Career Development Services, they are pretty good. Mm-hmm. They have nice programming, but some kind of way, the student athletes don't really get connected to that. And I like to say this, the athletic department, they're responsible for the student athletes that they have at the time. Once you graduate, you know, they have a whole new freshman group coming in that they have to be responsible for. So I get that, you know, they don't always have the focus to kind of deal with the student athletes. But I think one thing that's really important is, you know, developing that network. And a network of student athletes that really know what you've gone through, that can you can connect with. So yes, that's something that I feel the same way about. When I finished school, there wasn't anybody helping me find anything or you know, do, and I didn't know who to call, you know. I didn't know who to call. So I think it's really important, because the Tulane network is huge. But if it's not connected, you know, we talk about you're only as strong as your weakest link. If the link is not connected, then you can't tap into that. So one of the main things that, you know, we're trying to focus on here as we move forward is developing those networks. I'll say this, and you know it, before I do anything, I'm calling somebody I know from Tulane to get their impressions, get their advice. You know, if I'm looking for a plumber, it doesn't matter what it is. If I need some legal advice, I am going to tap into my Tulane network. But that network has been developed. And then, again, when I left school, I didn't know who that network was. There wasn't anyone there for me. I was literally out there trying to do those things on my own. And so I think that it's important for us to, again, get together, develop those networks. There are some student athletes that, you know, they come from families, they know people, they can do it, but I would say there's a huge number that do not necessarily know who to connect with for those next steps.
Yeah, that's very unfortunate.
So that's kind of important. So what type of support systems do you think would be helpful for student athletes? So here you are now, and now you look back. You see how the world has changed, mm-hmm. and how, you know, you have LinkedIn, you have all these different services available. How would you say, well, what are some things that you feel we could use to kind of connect with present student athletes or graduated student mm-hmm. athletes, recently grads?
Sure. I think it's vital that the Tulane sporting arena, basketball, football, baseball, track, volleyball, tap into the networks that they have. We have tens of thousands of graduates from Tulane who play sports.
We do.
You pick a sport. In addition to that, we have hundreds of thousands of Tulane graduates who have professional degrees who have gone beyond the four-year college. They have graduate degrees, masters,
correct,
doctors, lawyers. And I think if the athletic facilities, the coaches, say, for example, we're going to, and I think Coach Fritz has been doing this for football, tap into those student athletes who are willing to speak to the sport. In other words, grab Melvin Ferdinand, Mike Arata, Terrence Jones, Mark Zeno, Larry Rout, and the list goes on. You grab Wenzel Harrison, you grab guys who played here and who are in positions, Chance Miller, Steve Ballard, and have them speak to those players, those student athletes. I spoke to St. Aug students on a number of occasions by invitation of the principal or teachers there. And during my time in the Marine Corps, I would say the military is not for everyone.
Right.
And I would give that same speech to some of these student athletes here at Tulane. The military is not for everyone. But this is what it did for me.
Correct.
If you're interested, this is what it could do for you. And we have doctors and lawyers who say, okay, this is what I did.
Right.
This is who helped me get there. Here's the blueprint for it. Follow it. Put your work in. Don't be afraid to get your hands dirty. And you too can be successful. As I mentioned earlier, none of us got to where we are by ourselves.
Right.
No one before us got to where they are by themselves. So if we're willing to help each other out, things could be so much better. So much better. But I think, again, there has to be the willingness, the ability to reach out by the coaching, coaching staff, the president of the university, to those Tulane graduates who are willing to come back and just help lift up some, help provide some guidance. It doesn't necessarily have to be financial resources. It could be your time,
right,
your experience.
I feel like the alumni services, they do a lot of programming that falls in that line.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like part of the issue is just the connection, the student athlete getting connected to those resources.
Okay.
We're going to be working closely with Alumni Services as a group, as a T Club group. We're going to be working closely with them so that we can hopefully bridge that gap. That's what we want to do. Definitely produce content to talk about things that have happened, but also to make connections and develop a network of people that will always be there.
And Carmen, if I may, I think that's wonderful for the Tulane Network Group to continue to reach out. I will add to that, the student athlete has to do his or her part.
Oh, yeah.
When someone is offering to help you, don't be reluctant to accept that help out of embarrassment,
mm-hmm,
out of fear, out of simply not knowing what questions to ask.
Correct.
Yeah,
I've noticed because, we have dipped and dabbed into reaching out to student athletes for a long time. And again, the coaches are always super focused on, their task at hand. They have to win. if they don't win, mm-hmm, nowadays, it's always an issue. So there's not always someone there that's, I want to use the word, responsible for dealing with the student athletes that have already graduated. So I feel like that's some space that we can fill if we get supported enough to help fill that gap. I think that's really important. But there are plenty of resources out there. There definitely are. And again, I didn't know about them, mm-hmm, when I was coming through. And to be able to let the student athletes today know that those resources are available,
mm-hmm,
that's going to be important as well.
Mm-hmm.
So again, let's talk about your experience. Did you experience like a sense of loss? I know you talked about feeling like something was missing. Was it the camaraderie of being in sports? Do you have a tendency to look to jobs that are collaborative? How does your personality reflect being an athlete today? Your personality, you're a parent, so you do have kids. So how does all of that reflect on having been a student athlete?
I am a father, three kids, 21-year-old Zachary, 16-year-old Nicholas, and 14-year-old Chloe, my daughter.
Oh, wow.
And she keeps me busy.
Of course.
Yes, she does. You know, the boys, we're easier than you guys.
Right.
We're easier. Being a part of a team, again, it goes back to Comiskey Park, playing football. It helps, and studies have demonstrated this, that it helps develop you as a person. And interestingly enough, my desire was to join the military, a team, join the Marine Corps, a team. So I believe strongly in the team concept. I think there's, it's not just what I think, it's the facts demonstrate that being a part of a team helps build character, the teamwork, responsibility. You don't want to let your teammates down. And the benefits are enormous when you look at team athletics, team sports, or team professions.
Great. Are there any, like, hobbies that you have other than, you know, Marine Corps, running? You know, any other hobbies?
Yes, I have
that
hobbies.
You have. Do tell.
Physical fitness, I think it's vital. It helps you. Physical fitness helps maintain good health. So I love traveling. As you know, we've gone on motorcycle rides together.
No, right.
You're a Harley Davidson fan. I love getting on my motorcycle. I took a trip to South Beach, Miami, on a motorcycle.
Wow. Speaking of that, you've been to many different places around the world. What are some of your favorite places that you've been to, why?
I'm going to answer those questions.
Okay.
Let me go back to the hobbies for a moment.
Okay.
I love reading articles or novels that interest me.
Okay. So more like nonfiction, fiction, bios.
I like nonfiction.
Okay.
I love nonfiction. Yeah.
Okay.
I never really got into fiction. I was at the bookstore, and Stephen A. Smith has this book out.
Okay.
It's titled The Straight Shooter. And, you know, Stephen A. could get loud at times.
Right.
And I saw the cover of the book, and I picked it up, flipped a few pages going through, and it grabbed my attention. So I purchased the book. That's the book I'm currently reading.
Okay.
And as I have begun reading through it, it's fascinating. His story, it is fascinating. So physical fitness, reading, traveling, those are just some of my hobbies. More importantly, I love, absolutely love spending time with my kids.
Yes, definitely.
They get on my nerves sometimes.
Most of the times I see you, you have at least one in tow.
Yes, ma'am. So love the kids. Mentioning that has caused me to forget your other question you wanted to talk about.
I know you've traveled a lot.
Yes.
So I want to talk about some of the
enjoyable
places that
the
you've been
places.
And that kind of stand out
what
to
made
you.
Them fun.
Yes.
Why?
Yes.
Okinawa, Japan.
Okay.
I spent 3 years there. I was there from 1997 to 2000. I did not want to go to Okinawa. Like, listen, Marine Corps. I know this is an all voluntary force. I came to you, but don't send me to Okinawa. They're like, okay, you're going to Okinawa. So off I went, kicking and screaming, like, no. I got there, Carmen, and didn't want to leave. As you mentioned, I've traveled.
Right.
I've been to, if you may recall, the first football season, of first football game of our 1989 season, we played Hawaii.
Right.
In
right.
Hawaii.
Right, right, right.
Been to all parts of California, all parts of Florida, the beaches, the Carolinas, beautiful beaches. Okinawa has some of the most beautiful beaches in the world.
Wow.
It's this small island that's about 65 miles long.
Okay.
About 17 miles wide at its widest point. And it's just out there with some of the most dynamic beaches. Sunset Beach, Emerald Beach. There's a beach called Emerald, which has some of the prettiest white sand I've ever seen in my life. The people there, many of the locals, are so friendly and kind. It's a totally different culture. There are no guns allowed on Okinawa, except for the military.
Right.
And to walk out any time of the day, not being concerned about getting shot. The people, generally speaking, are quiet people. You could have 100 of them in a room, and it's very quiet. And I love that.
Of course.
Yes, I love that. So enjoyed Okinawa for a number of reasons. Had a fun time in Marine Corps Base Quantico, Virginia.
Okay.
Yeah, we call that the crossroads of the Marine Corps, because if you serve in the Marine Corps, there's a very good chance at some point during your career you're going to be stationed at Quantico. So that was fun, right outside of D.C., about 36 miles south of Washington.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. So Okinawa.
Yes. Would go back today if I could.
Have you been to Europe or?
Yes. I've been to Horn. I've been to the Netherlands. Not stationed there. I went there because my ex-mother-in-law is from there.
Okay.
So my family and I, when Nicholas was about a year and a half, we flew out there so that he could visit some of his great relatives, great grandparents. And I got a chance to meet other family members. Yeah.
Nice. Jim coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. What do we have? So when you play sports, it's clear what is considered winning and what is considered success. What do you consider having a successful life is for you? You know, we live in a society now that's so materialistic and monetarily driven. But what do those things what comes to mind for you when you think of, you know, being successful?
I think there are so many. There's a plethora of definitions.
And there's nothing wrong with having a lot of money. There's absolutely nothing wrong with it.
I can't speak from experience on that note.
Right, right.
Because I don't.
Right.
But I will say success, again, there are so many different definitions. I consider myself successful, and here's why. The Lord has blessed me with to be in a situation where I have the freedom to do some things, the financial freedom, and I am not wealthy by any stretch of the imagination, but he's blessed me to live a certain lifestyle that I'm comfortable with, living within my means, and having the freedom, the latitude, the flexibility to be able to accept this invitation on a 2-hour notice. Hey, Melvin, and here we are.
Right.
That, to me, is a blessing, and it's also being successful, in my opinion.
Yes, totally agree. I think you're a huge success.
Uh-huh.
Can't wait to see you doing your next stages of life, your pursuits. So, any other educational pursuits once you left Tulane?
Well, in the Marine Corps, we have to do our professional military reading, and we have to take different courses. I had to attend the Command and Staff War College. It's a six-month course and geared towards tactics and a lot of essays. And we have the option to work towards a master's. And
so how did your rank goes? Like, how does your rank in the service, your Marine service, how did that elevate?
Well, I actually enlisted in the Marine Corps. So we have the enlisted side and you have the officer side.
Okay.
So I went to Marine Corps Recruit Depot, San Diego, and enlisted, went through boot camp, and got orders to go to Jacksonville, North Carolina. That was my first duty station. While there, I submitted a package to go to Officer Candidate School. So I spent a year and a half, right at 2 years, enlisted, put my package in, got orders to go to Quantico, Marine Corps Base Quantico, for Officer Candidate School. And once commissioned a second lieutenant, then 2 years, time and grade as a second lieutenant, you automatically get promoted to first lieutenant. Another 2 years at that rank, then you get promoted to captain. And from captain on, it's based on performance. Your evaluations, your physical fitness tests, your score on the rifle range, on the pistol range, marksmanship. And I got promoted to major.
So how is your marksmanship?
Expert, Marine. Come on now. I didn't want to go there, but you can ask me that question.
Of course, because I don't know. I need to know these things.
No, I actually shot sharpshooter before.
Awesome.
Yeah, but I shot.
Did you jump out of planes? Did you have to do that?
No, I requested to do that.
Okay.
I wanted to do some spy rigging, but the command that I worked for at the time, 4th Marine Regiment in Okinawa, Japan, it's a high op tempo, fast paced regiment, infantry regiment. And my boss wouldn't let me go. He's like, we need you here. Can't have you going out there jumping out planes. Like, sir, it won't take that long. No. So, no, I never did it. Movement to contact while at the basic school, which is a six-month course after officer candidate school. I've been on a number of helicopters where there were exercises, and we had an exercise, Full Eagle. We flew from Okinawa, Japan, to South Korea. It's a two-week exercise. And spent way too many days on the beach. And once the exercise was over, we were getting ready to go to Hong Kong. But the 1st Marine Expeditionary Unit needed that ship we were on, the USS Bellawood. And we had to get back to Okinawa, so... Being on the plane, yes, but jumping out of them, the fun stuff, no.
That's the fun stuff?
At the time, I was in my early 30s.
Right.
I'm not trying to jump out of plane today.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. My cousin was I want to say he did Special Forces, but he was Army. Mm-hmm. And he did some jumps.
Yeah.
He did some jumps.
My oldest son, Zachary, is in the Marine Corps, and he is on target to go Special Forces. He's excited. I'm very proud of him. He just got back about 6 months ago from Okinawa, Japan.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did he enjoy it as well?
He loved it. I mean, the kid is 21. He's trying to do everything. Oh, Dad, you didn't jump out any planes? I got you covered. I'm going to do it for you. So, yeah, he's on track, and he's doing his thing. I'm very happy for him.
Excellent. Now, do you have any questions for me?
Yes, I do.
You do?
Let me get my list out.
Oh, my gosh.
No, I'm just messing with you. I do want to take this opportunity, Carmen, to truly thank you. We go way back, 19. No, I would give away our age if we said.
Right. We don't have to give that away.
Let's discuss that.
We talked about it a little bit.
1983, 84.
Back in the day.
Yeah. No, but thank you for the opportunity to come and answer questions and voice my opinion on some things. I truly appreciate it.
Nah, we definitely appreciate you. And again, we really want to develop our network. We really want to try to put together some pieces that will benefit the student athletes as they move from being a student athlete to the real world. I know one thing that happens to a lot of student athletes is, depending on how their season went, or depending on how they experience with, they're frustrated, they just leave, and then, you know, they don't want to be bothered. And then so many months down the line, they realize, wait, you know, I'm just kind of stuck out. And then they don't really know where to reach back to, how to reach back. Yeah. If you didn't like your coach, you're not going to reach back out to your coach. So I think it's really important for us to develop this platform so that even if they don't, you know, have a good experience playing, they went here, you know, they finished school, whatever it is, they should know that there's somewhere they can reach out to.
Absolutely.
And if we can start to develop that space for them, I think it would be a positive thing. All right. NIL. So we would like to, as a T club, be in that NIL space. So firstly, how do you feel about NIL? Because I know they did not have that when you were in school. So how do you feel it? Do you think of it as a positive for the sports world, and why do you feel that way?
Name, image, and likeness, I think, should have been around a long time ago. There was a push at one point during the 1989-1990. Some guys here on Tulane's team were pushing for it. It was not called name, image, and likeness, NIL. There was no name for it to my knowledge. Many of the student athletes just felt like we should get paid. When you look at what the big name college athletes bring to the program, for example, when I was playing ball here, it was common to see someone, a student, regular student, walking around with a number 10 football jersey on.
Right.
Or a number 11 football jersey on.
Right.
So they were representing Terrence Jones of Mark Zeno. You go to an LSU game, you're going to see someone wearing a number 7 jersey.
Right.
Whether it's Leonard Fournette or Tyrann Mathieu. That's the same for all these colleges, no matter what conference they're in. And now you look at name, image, and likeness, the NIL has exploded, and I think the players should get paid. The NCAA may argue against it. There are many coaches who have argued against it, but coaches are free to move about from program to program.
Correct.
Most of them obligate their contracts. The student athlete didn't have that luxury. And as we alluded to earlier, there were guys that I played football with here at Tulane who didn't come from families that were well off. And they didn't have money to do some of the basic things. Go do your laundry. Go to a fast food restaurant and grab a bite to eat. Now, we had Brough Commons that was open here on
right.
on the yard, but it would have been refreshing.
Was that Thursday night steak night? Or was that Monday night steak?
Carmen, it's been over 30 years. I don't remember. It was either Monday or Thursday.
It was Monday or Thursday, state night at Brough.
Yes, but guys wanted to get off campus and just get a break from the monotony of everything.
Right.
But they did not have the financial resources, and these were some top athletes. So I 100% support NIL. I think it's a good thing for the student athlete. The institution, the universities, will continue to get their money like they always have.
Right.
So I think NIL just helps the playing field be a little bit more even.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So have you thought of any ways you could be involved in the NIL?
No, I haven't. I really haven't given that any thought. That is not to say I'm not open to any ways in which I could help facilitate college athletes getting involved with NIL, but I have not sat down and given that any thought.
Cool. Well, so in terms of my thoughts on NIL, I definitely think it's super positive. Figuring out how to spread, you know, it's like anything. If someone can afford, based on their ability, to make a certain amount of money, I think it has been a travesty that they've stopped people from being able to do that.
I agree.
And had they just, to me, had they just allowed them to do whatever it was that they could do, it wouldn't have been such a huge issue. But to say, no, you can't, to me was just, was a bit much. Was too much, not a bit much, but too much.
Yeah.
And so I love the way that the people who are, you know, with movies, there are some people that make $20 million a movie. Some people, you know, make, you know, whatever they make, whatever it is they make.
Right.
I think it's based on the market, how you're marketed, how people receive you. I think that's all important. Where the advantage comes in at, I think the schools with the most money can throw the most money at the particular student athletes that they have. But there's only so much that can go around. I mean, so again, I really feel like the advantage that I think that any whoever, whatever you're worth, you should be able to get.
Yes.
And no one should ever stop that from happening. Some kind of all for it. As a group, we are going to try to do some NIL things to help support the student athletes.
Sure.
In terms of the transition. We're looking at a few initiatives, but at the same time, if somebody wants to go through T Club to, you know, make that connection, I think we're going to be in a position where we can help make those connections on an NIL level as well.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you know, we talked about Angel Reese and the type of things that she's doing. How do we market the student athlete here so that they can be in a better space than they may be in right now?
Yeah. You look at, as you mentioned, Angel Reese. There's also Livy Dunn, the mm-hmm. two of them on the cover of Sports Illustrated now,
mm-hmm.
and arguably two of the most successful college athletes right now
mm-hmm.
As it relates to NIL. So apparently they've cracked the code on marketing.
Right.
How do we do it? I think it comes with exposure. I think it comes with the performance of the athlete in his or her given sport.
Okay.
There's the old saying, everyone loves a winner. You
right.
have to produce. So when it comes to NIL, if you're a no name, per se, no one is going to be interested. So first and foremost, the student athlete has to be performing. And that right there, in my opinion, is half of the marketing strategy.
So how do you take a non-revenue sport and figure out that a non-revenue sport, they're all Americans, but it's mm-hmm. just not a sport that's, you know, put out there as much? How do we find a way to get those people included as well?
Oh, that's a tough one, because I think arguably football is the big, that's the granddaddy.
So society kind of dictates that space a whole lot.
Society dictated a lot.
Yes.
You could have someone who's ranked number one in the world. And this is no offense to golf or tennis or swim, but it's just not going to generate the revenue that the superstar football player.
Right.
You look at Arch Manning as a senior at Newman. That name, the Manning name, that brand, now he's at Texas. And he's a freshman, but he was killing it as a senior in high school.
Right.
His production. And the production of the student athlete, the exposure that he or she gets. But to your point, the demand of the public. And people want to see football, basketball, baseball, LSU national champions, you know.
So I think one thing that we can do as a group is to make sure we start tapping in to the social media spaces of the student athletes at our school. You know, if we can invest in them as alumni, you know, if we can click on them, if we can start increasing their exposure just on that level, that may help as well.
I believe that would certainly help. There's no doubt about that. To what degree? Well, we don't know. We won't know until we actually start doing it.
Right.
But in terms of importance, what is it that the public hungers for?
Right.
How well is that student athlete doing in his or her given sport that the public hungers for? And I think from that point, we would have a better idea as far as what we could do to facilitate that athlete getting into, that student athlete getting into the NIL and truly benefiting from it.
Yeah, it's amazing, like driving through Baton Rouge and seeing all the LSU athletes with billboards, and mm-hmm. it's just little things like that that can be done, you know, anywhere.
Absolutely. You talk about LSU.
You can be
again.
Locally, statewide, national. I mean, you can start in any space to kind
Without
of move
a doubt,
it.
You have two national champions at LSU, baseball and basketball. And everyone now is putting the pressure on their head coach, Kelly.
And women's basketball. Women's basketball. Yeah, that's
what I'm talking about.
Right.
Yeah.
And baseball.
Women's basketball at LSU, first time ever winning a national championship in basketball, both
Correct.
Men and women for LSU. So Angel Reese, she blew up on the national stage, if not reaching overseas. I'm a little reluctant to say the world stage, but if she hasn't done so yet, I think she's
will.
Well on her way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She has some national product lines mm-hmm. that will reach overseas.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so we have alumni, so hopefully we can tap into them and see if we can make some connections with that as well.
Oh, yeah. Should be wonderful.
Yeah. Could you talk about what we've done so far?
So far what we have done, we have a couple of initiatives we got going on. We have going on. the first one is it's going to be suiting up with Tulane. We're suiting up with T-Club, where we actually identify a student athlete and take them to get some suits that they can wear to a job interview. Mm-hmm. So we want to make sure that they're properly suited so that when they go on a job interview mm-hmm. that they look the part. Exactly.
Absolutely. That matters.
And so that's one of the initiatives we want to do. And then another initiative is going to be getting prepared with T-Club so we will, develop some kind of mentor programs, but talk to the student athletes about steps they can take to move into that job space, whether it's talking to them about finances, career development, helping them, create those networks, but providing that space for them to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So those are kind of two initiatives that we have going on that hopefully will just begin to start tapping into, who they are, who we are, making the connections, and then, hopefully people with businesses would be like, I'm looking for this type of kid, and we want to get connected with them.
Okay.
So we're trying to bridge the gap, slowly mm-hmm. but surely, one initiative at a time.
Hey, sounds like you're on the right trajectory.
We're trying. Yeah. Sounds like we're on the right trajectory.
Yes. We are definitely.
So that's a couple of the things that we're doing. So I think, everything we talked about today was great. I will be seeing you at the games.
Definitely.
And on the bike.
Yes, for sure. We need to get a ride in.
We need to get a ride in.
Yes.
Awesome. So thanks for coming out today.
You're welcome. Well, I'll wrap this up because I have two of my three kids right out there waiting for me, so I have to go.
All right. Have a good one.
Thank you so much, Carmen.
All right.
All right.